is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah. وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Our headlines: the Taliban announced a caretaker government in Afghanistan, which includes ministers sanctioned by the UN and wanted by the US. As our correspondent reports from Istanbul, pressure is mounting on the Turkish government to stem the refugee influx amid a rise in number of Afghans crossing the country's border. Also, a power earthquake hit southwestern Mexico near the beach resort of Acapulco, leaving at least one person dead. Thank you for joining us. The Taliban have announced key ministers of a caretaker government in Afghanistan 3 weeks after taking over the country, including the capital, Kabul. In a press conference, Sabihullah Mujahid said Hassan Akhund has been appointed acting prime minister, while Taliban co-founder Mullah Abdul Ghani Barodar will be the acting deputy premier. He said Sirajuddin Haqqani has been appointed acting interior minister. The spokesman added Amir Khan Muttaqi has been named acting foreign minister. Mullah Yaqub will serve as acting defense minister in the new government. Mujahid said other ministers of the caretaker government will be announced in due course. Several of the appointees are in UN and US sanctions lists. Political commentator Brian Downing says the Taliban never expected to take over Kabul, adding that the group has a hard time to transform into a centralized government.
I don't think the Taliban expected to take Kabul this quickly. I think even the Taliban people have admitted, those in Kabul say that they really wanted some sort of government in Kabul to negotiate with, to keep foreign aid coming in, and to negotiate some sort of interim government, which they would dominate, of course, but they really weren't prepared for this. Now what they have to do is they have to go from a decentralized military movement. You know, they had provincial commanders and district commanders, and they had this council that had all sorts of factions. Now they have to become a centralized government over a population that is very poor. They're not very welcome of Pashtun rule. strongly supported the Taliban. They just found it somewhat less objectionable than the Karzai and the Ghani governments.
The Taliban say their newly appointed government in Afghanistan will uphold, quote, Sharia law in all matters of governance and life. In his first message since the group rose to power, Taliban leader Haybatullah Akhundzadeh said the new government will start functioning at the earliest. He said the group is committed to all international laws, treaties, and commitments which are not in conflict with the Islamic law. Akhundzadeh pledged that the new leadership would ensure lasting peace, prosperity, and development in the country. He also called on Afghans not to leave the country. The Taliban say they have taken full control of Panjshir province, where the group is fighting against the forces of the National Resistance Front, led by Ahmad Massoud. However, Massoud has dismissed the announcement by the Taliban, saying his forces still hold strategic areas of Panjshir Valley. Amin Alemi reports.
The Taliban spokesman has declared the collapse of Panjshir Valley in the north of Kabul. Zabihullah Mujahid says the war is over in Afghanistan and that there is no anti-Taliban resistance in the country, except by Daesh.
The war is ended all over Afghanistan after successfully capturing Panjshir province as the last stronghold for the ousted enemy. The Islamic Emirate forces have active presence in the valley.
However, the leader of National Resistance Front says he is in Panjshir and that his forces are deployed across the strategic areas of the valley. According to Massoud, the resistance will push ahead with its fight on the Taliban until victory is achieved. In an audio message, Massoud called on all Afghans to come together and stand against the Taliban.
I call on all my countrymen inside and abroad to launch a national uprising to defend our dignity, independence, and freedom. I also call on the international community to be aware that the Taliban has never changed.
The leader of National Resistance Front also slammed the Taliban for what he called defying the demand of a top delegation of religious scholars to engage in talks to resolve the conflict in Panjshir. He also accused Pakistan of directly invading Afghanistan, saying the Pakistani military used drones to bomb Panjshir to help the Taliban. Ahmed Massoud's claim on the Pakistani military interference in Panjshir has complicated the situation. On Monday, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman was asked about the reports of Pakistani airstrikes. The spokesman said Iran condemns all foreign interference in Afghanistan without specifying any country. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Turkish officials say some 95,000 illegal migrants have crossed the country's borders this year alone. While Ankara says it's taking extreme measures to prevent the refugee influx, Turkish people have voiced concern over this issue, demanding the government to resolve the refugee crisis. Rashan Saglam reports from Istanbul.
Turkish Deputy Interior Minister Ismail Çataklı has given details about the number of illegal migrants who entered Turkey this year and are still crossing the borders, including some 40,000 Afghans. He said that border security managed to prevent nearly 308,000 illegal migrants from entering the country. Çataklı noted that in 2020, more than 500,000 people who tried to enter Turkey illegally were stopped by security forces. He also said that claims of unusual rise in the number of migrants crossing to Turkey from southern borders are baseless.
211 bağımsız birimden oluşan 53 çok katlı binanın yıkımı gerçekleşti.
A total of 94,915 illegal immigrants, including 40,098 Afghans, have been held since the beginning of the year. Considering developments in Afghanistan and the possibility of political instability triggering migration movements, the ministry closely follows the situation.
Turkey is facing criticism from opposition groups over its refugee policies. The country has played a key role in illegal migrant transit to Europe. Refugee influx coming from war-torn countries such as Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan rose in the past few years. Those seeking better lives are taking Turkey as a transition. However, some are not lucky enough to cross to Europe. Therefore, they choose to stay in Turkey and try to make a living there. The presence of illegal migrants has affected both Turkish government and citizens, who blame foreigners in the country for the economic crisis as well as unemployment.
Now, in Turkey, there is at least 4 million refugees as per official numbers for registered refugees. Turkish government is worried about the illegal migrant influx because opposition political parties are using this card against the ruling party. The upcoming election is in 2023, and this will be the main issue that politicians will use to gain votes. Turkish people are calling their government to negotiate with the Syrian government and send back Syrian refugees as the situation in Syria is better and most of the country is secure. Also, there are talks concerning making a new deal with the EU on Afghan refugees. However, it will not be easy for the Turkish government to seal such a deal before resolving the Syrian refugees crisis.
Turkey is now taking extra security measures at its southern borders to prevent illegal migration, especially after the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan. Turkey is currently hosting more than 4 million refugees, which is more than any other country in the world. Many analysts believe that if the ruling AK party does not solve the refugee crisis, its defeat in the upcoming elections is highly likely. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
A powerful earthquake has struck southwestern Mexico, leaving at least one person dead so far. The magnitude 7 quake caused rock falls and damaging buildings. It also did damage to Acapulco. The tremor caused widespread power outages in several states. The Mexican state power utility said the quake affected some 1.6 million users across the country. The Mexican National Seismological Service said the epicenter was 14 kilometers southeast of the beach resort of Acapulco. A massive earthquake struck the Mexican capital in 1985, killing thousands of people. A new poll shows that Americans have become more wary of intrusive government spying in the name of national security. A poll conducted by the Associated Press found that about two-thirds of Americans are opposed to the possibility of warrantless monitoring of telephone calls, emails, and text messages made within the country. According to the poll, about half are opposed to government monitoring of internet searches, including those by U.S. citizens without a warrant. The survey shows that Americans were less concerned about government surveillance more than 20 years ago when the U.S. started a so-called war on terror by invading Afghanistan and later Iraq. The Washington correspondent says past revelations regarding the widespread monitoring of U.S. people into social media has made the public distrustful of the authorities. Listen.
We have Julian Assange. We have Cambridge Analytica when it comes to Facebook. And we have just a general distrust of each other in general as we face a polarized nation which is split behind political ideological lines. So if you factor all of these things in and many more, which I have not named, you start to make more sense off of why more people feel more distrustful of the government. We also have to remember that we had a former president who also talked a lot about fake news. And we looked at just how different types of misinformation and disinformation are feeding into the cultural ethos of the country. And when you look at just some of the failures of our U.S. intelligence system, more people are saying, well, we're not so trustful of the systems that we've traditionally had a lot of faith and confidence in the past. Not only that, we're more reliant on digital services. We're using our computers more. We're using smart speakers more. I even failed to say the name because I know it will alert one in my house right now if I say that special call word that has been heavily commercialized. That's because we all, or many of us, have these digital systems, smart speakers, that are already entrenched in our daily lives. And to have the government further build upon that, it seems a lot more threatening and people are a lot more distrustful.
In the United States, the number of deaths from the novel coronavirus has surpassed the grim milestone of 650,000. The figure is based on data from the Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. has recorded more than 40.2 million COVID-19 cases since the beginning of the pandemic. The country is the worst hit by the pandemic in terms of both infections and fatalities. Elsewhere in the Americas, Mexico logged nearly 1,100 new deaths, raising its overall death toll close to 265,000. The country also registered nearly 16,000 new cases. That is why the World Health Organization has criticized wealthy nations for hoarding COVID-19 vaccines and treatments.
The developed world and the industrialized world just doesn't seem to get it. It really doesn't. It talks, the rhetoric is fine, it's all about sharing, it's all about fairness, but in reality, when push comes to shove and these products are available, they are hoarded in countries and they're not shared.
The criticism came at a Q&A session attended by the WHO's top epidemiologists. They described hoarding as an immoral and unfair practice that's prolonging the pandemic. The UN Health Agency has set a target for countries to vaccinate at least 10% of their population by the end of this month. It has called on wealthier nations to halt booster vaccine shots to help poorer countries meet the target. According to the UN, nearly 60% of the population in the European Union has been fully inoculated. In contrast, Africa has only vaccinated 3% of its population. NATO has accused Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran of breaking international rules with respect to arms control. Critics, however, have pointed out to the 30-nation alliance hypocrisy given its conduct in nations such as Afghanistan. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
NATO has just concluded its 17th annual arms control conference with harsh criticism directed towards authorities in Moscow, Beijing, Pyongyang, and Tehran. NATO, led by the United States, continues to spend billions on military hardware, but clearly does not like it when nations outside the alliance develop their own defense capabilities.
There are also other players fielding nuclear weapons and advanced missile systems. North Korea and Iran, for example, are blatantly ignoring or breaking the global rules.
Iran has always stressed its nuclear program is purely peaceful. In fact, Tehran did all in its power to reassure the international community by signing up to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in 2015. It was the United States under Donald Trump that illegally withdrew from that nuclear accord. Stoltenberg failed to mention this once during his speech. In any case, experts say NATO is not in a position to point the finger. There are significant divisions within the 30-nation alliance. Its credibility is currently at rock bottom, critics argue, following its 20-year-long mission in Afghanistan.
The European member states of NATO will need to come up with real arguments to demonstrate that NATO makes values. You need to demonstrate the return on investment.
The head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, concluded his address to the Arms Control Conference with these words.
You can count on NATO's commitment to security and stability.
That statement will likely cut to the bone for any Afghan citizen able to hear it. Anti-war campaigners say the destruction NATO countries brought to Afghanistan during the past two decades cannot be put into words. And now those Afghan civilians who somehow managed to survive have no idea what the future holds. Jerome Hughes at NATO headquarters, Brussels.
Well, that's your war news for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Thank you.
supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep, and hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick, and healed, and made well, and afflicted, and sat upon the throne, and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Zionist regime officers wounded the detainees, terrorized them, and whomever dared to lift his head upwards risked more beatings by officers. According to affidavits, the floor of the room was covered in blood from the beatings. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Boxbaum Ryder. This article is published under the heading Palestinian protesters recount harrowing details of torture at the hands of Israeli regime police. In May, the world watched the Zionist regime's brutal occupation on full display. The forcible displacement of Sheikh Jarrah residents was underway. The Zionist regime's security forces attacked Muslim worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan. The Israeli regime rocket fire rained down on Gaza, and Jewish extremists chanted "Death to Arabs" in the streets. According to multiple testimonies, the Zionist regime police in Nazareth ran a torture room where they ruthlessly attacked Palestinian detainees during the wave of demonstrations against the Zionist regime in May. Now, as international headlines fade on Palestine, the Israeli regime violence continues. Fayez Zobeidat was talking on the phone about 20 feet away from a protest in Nazareth. The moment the 21-year-old student hung up the phone, the Israeli regime police threw a stun grenade into the street. An officer then charged at him and punched him in the nose. Zobeidat was soon encircled by police who grabbed him, hit him, and pushed him toward a border police officer who tried to slam his head against a wall. "I asked why they were hitting me when I am not resisting," Zobeidat said, adding, "I put my hands behind my back even though they didn't handcuff me. Nevertheless, the same border police officer hit me in the nose with the walkie-talkie that he was holding." The officers dragged Zobeidat by his head to the police station, beating him along the way. "On the way, we met a policeman who appeared to be an officer and started laughing and said to them, 'Did you only arrest him? That's not enough. We need more,' Zobeidat said." The beating continued inside the police station. Cops kicked, slapped, and hit detainees with batons, laughing as they struck them. Zobeidat detailed how one officer smacked detainees with an M16 rifle. He watched as one man with a broken nose, face covered in blood, was continuously hit by officers. Then Zobeidat described his own treatment. "A police officer approached me and whispered in my ear, threatening me. He cursed my mother, my sister, and my wife. He then asked, 'Did you understand?' I didn't answer, and he immediately slapped me in the face. He asked me again, 'Do you understand?' I still didn't answer, and he slapped me again in the face. Finally, he said, 'Go explain to your friends.' He pushed me back down to the floor and hit me again." Zobeidat's violent detention in May is one of many such, according to Adala, the legal center for Arab minority rights in the occupied territories. The advocacy group collected multiple sworn affidavits attesting to the abuse of Palestinian protesters by the Zionist regime officers, attorneys, bystanders, and children inside Nazareth police station from May 9th to May 14th. The majority of the violent arrests and most of the abuse were conducted by the Zionist regime special forces, including undercover Mista Varim, counter-terror units within the Israeli regime army border police and the Zionist regime police, officers pretending to be Palestinians. Adala submitted a complaint to the Zionist regime attorney general and the chairman of the police investigation department on June 7th. In their letter, Adala wrote, "Police officers led the detainees to a room located on the left side of the entrance corridor to the station, forcing them to sit on the floor handcuffed, to lower their heads towards the floor, and began to beat them on all parts of their bodies, using kicks and clubs, slamming their heads against walls or doors and more. Officers wounded the detainees, terrorized them, and whomever dared to lift his head upwards risked more by beatings by officers. According to the affidavits, the floor of the room was covered in blood from the beatings. Under the Zionist regime law, authorities must respond to the letter within 45 days. By Adala, attorney and co-author of the complaint, Wassam Sharaf, who told Min Press that Adala has not received a response from the Attorney General or Police Investigation Department. Adala did receive a response from Nazareth Chief of Police, stating that he will cooperate if there is an investigation and will take the appropriate disciplinary actions. What happened inside the police station in Nazareth amounts to torture and ill treatment and requires the immediate opening of a criminal investigation to examine the circumstances and the conditions of the protesters' detention at the station, including the investigation and prosecution of police officers involved in the violence, Adolo attorneys wrote in their complaint. Sharaf explained that the witness and victim accounts of police brutality inside the Israeli regime police station describe activity deemed torturous under international law. What we have seen in the police station is that instead of investigating the people, the police would be the mob. The police deny the detainees in need of medical attention. That medical attention make them sign false affidavits as a condition to get medical attention. When this treatment is directed at detainees, it may amount to torture according to international law. Torture is defined under international law as intentionally inflicting severe pain or suffering in order to obtain a confession or information, intimidate or coerce the individual, or as punishment for alleged offenses. Torture is illegal and considered a war crime. In a statement to Min Press News, the Zionist regime police said, "We emphasize that an investigation branch officer contacted the director of detention on behalf of the public defender's office and requested the presence of defense attorneys at the station. And accordingly, when the detainees arrived at the station, two defense attorneys were present to advise them. Unfortunately, some of the lawyers complaining about the appeal were at the entrance to the station, tried to create provocations on the spot. Notwithstanding the foregoing, they were periodically allowed to enter the station and tour the facility in order to prove that the detainees were being treated properly." The police spokesperson also noted that medical staff was present at the station and detainees in need of medical care were promptly treated. The Zionist regime police launched a mass arrest campaign in May, targeting Palestinian citizens of the occupied territories who participated in protests against ethnic cleansing in Sheikh Jarrah, attacks at Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza. The Israeli regime police arrested 2,142 individuals and filed 184 indictments during Operation Guardian of the Walls and Operation Law and Order. According to Sharaf, more than 150 Palestinians were arrested in Nazareth in May, and about 1 in 10 were indicted. Ashraf Mahroum, an attorney representing 9 people detained by police in Nazareth, said his clients and others were charged for protesting illegally, creating illegal organizations, and assaulting police officers. Mahroum's clients allege police fired rubber bullets at the upper parts of their bodies during the protest, a direct violation of the law governing use of rubber bullets. During their detention, officers struck them with batons and smacked them over the head with guns. Most of his clients' injuries were on the head and face. Some were forced to sign affidavits stating they won't disclose what happened to them in order to receive medical treatments. Evidence of similar police violence against Palestinians appeared in other cities across 1948 occupied Palestine, including in Lydd, Acca, Jaffa, and Haifa, Sharaf said, adding detainees in those localities arrived in court with visible signs of abuse. Sharaf concluded, "Adala has other testimonies about police brutality in different areas. Some of this brutality was against protesters and some of it has been inside police stations against detainees. With the systematic ill treatment that we have witnessed from May 9th to May 14th, we can assume that more people have been subject to such kind of treatment." The Zionist regime security agency, ISA, has long used torture as a standard tactic during interrogations of Palestinian residents of occupied territories. Until late 1990s, the ISA was allowed to use psychological pressure and a moderate degree of physical pressure in order to prevent terrorism, according to 1987 recommendations from a state commission. The commission's opinion permitted the ISA to use methods of torture in their interrogations under the necessary defense clause found in the Israeli regime penal law. The Israeli regime Supreme Court banned the use of physical methods during interrogations in 1999 after a series of petitions were filed by human rights organizations and Palestinians who experienced ISA interrogations. However, the court ruled the practice of physical pressure could remain in urgent cases as part of the ticking bomb exception under the necessity defense. This legal loophole has allowed torture and ill treatment to persist in ISA interrogations, despite the Zionist regime Justice Ministry having drafted a law to criminalize torture. According to Public Committee Against Torture in the Occupied Territories, PCATI, 1,300 complaints regarding the use of torture against Palestinian citizens in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, OPT, by the ISA have been submitted to the Ministry of Justice since 2001. These complaints resulted in only one criminal investigation and no indictments. PCATI receives dozens of complaints each year, attesting to brutality occurring during arrest, detention, interrogation, and imprisonment of Palestinians from OPT. The nonprofit organization estimates 5% to 10% of these cases amount to instances of severe torture. Severe interrogations increased sharply in 2020. In the passing year, more people were tortured in the occupied territories than in any other year in the past decade, PCATI said in their 2020 situation report on torture of Palestinians by the Israeli regime security forces. While cases of torture are prevalent within OPET, Tal Steiner, Director General of PCATI, said 1948 occupied Palestine is now experiencing an escalation of torture incidents. Steiner told Min Press PCATI has seen attributes that are usually found in the West Bank trickling into the occupied territories. There is administrative arrest, prevention of rights to seek counsel, to receive medical attention. Those are things that are quite unfortunately common in the West Bank and the occupied territories that have now become more evident within the occupied territories proper. This is not something that's usual or routine within the occupied territories for the citizens, Palestinian or not. So it's a turn for the worse. Steiner attributed this surge within historic Palestine to a culture of impunity spurred by the Zionist regime politicians like former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, explaining, when the police and military forces entered the mixed cities within the occupied territories to so-called restore the peace, then Prime Minister Netanyahu was quoted saying, go ahead and do your job and don't worry about any commission of inquiry. These types of announcements by the Prime Minister and other Israeli regime leaders can also be a reason why police officers thought they could get away with it. They can use extreme force towards citizens, demonstrators, and especially toward people from minority groups and go unpunished. On May 13th, the eve of Muslim holiday Eid al-Fitr, Nazareth resident Omar Laban was out with friends to celebrate. As he approached an ATM to withdraw money, he saw an officer decked in full riot gear running toward him Instinctively, he began running away. The cops started throwing grenades at me, and I kept running because I knew that if I stood still, I could be badly wounded by the grenades. Lobin said, while I was still running, one of the policemen raised his hand and hit me in the left eye, and I fell to the ground. Police surrounded Lobin on the pavement, kicking him in the face and head. One officer pressed his boot into Lobin's head and shoulder. I felt intense pain all over my body from my head to my legs. One of them started kicking me in the artery behind the ear, Lobin said. At that moment, I thought I was going to die. At the police station, Lobin saw detainees stuffed into a room resembling prisoners of war. They sat on the floor with their legs folded under them and heads bent. A masked officer paced around the room with a club-like object in his hand. Any detainee who lifted his head met the full swing of the officer's bat on their head. They pushed me down in the corner, and I lowered my head and curled up. Nevertheless, the same police officer hit me hard on the head with that object, Lobin said. Days after his detention, Lobin still felt excruciating pain throughout his body. He couldn't sleep from the dizziness. He couldn't eat without vomiting. He couldn't speak coherently. He still doesn't understand why he was arrested when he wasn't participating in any nearby protest. It was the first time I had been arrested, an arrest that I believe was illegal, pointless, and very violent, Lobin said. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is Iran. This ancient land with its brilliant past have weathered the hurricanes of time throughout history. Once a homeland for great scientists, the country has learned to explore the world of science and push back the boundaries on its own, climbing up the summits of knowledge and technology to the astonishment of the world to show that this land can once again be a home to great scientists in the modern world. Like their ancestors, this nation will remain steadfast in their attempts towards the lofty pinnacles of science and technology. Iran, the land of knowledge.
توانستیم سانتریفیوژ های توبیولاری که مورد نیاز بخش سلامت بود.
We have managed to provide the health sector with tubular centrifuges. The sector was in need of them, but for years it was unable to have them as machines with dual function. The health sector uses these centrifuges in producing vaccines for human beings and animals.
در تولید واکسن های دامی و انسانی استفاده بکن.
اطمینانی که ما بعد از تولیدات سازمان انرژی
The confidence we had in Pasteur Institute of Iran after the production of the centrifuges by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran was the confidence of any country in possession of them. They are a source of national pride and assure us that we can meet the country's needs with domestic products with more confidence and higher precision and at a more reasonable price.
اطمینان بیشتر و دقت بالاتر
و خوشبختانه در سطح بین المللی.
Fortunately, we are receiving orders from abroad. Of course, we are at the outset, but there is a bright outlook for us in this regard.
ولی چشمانداز بسیار روشنی در این خصوص داریم.
Hello there. This machine is a tubular centrifuge, or a health centrifuge, designed and manufactured by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran last year. Thank God, this success has made the country independent of foreigners and has helped the health system a lot, while the country is still under sanctions and experiencing resistance economy. Today, thanks to the efforts of our statesmen and the good management of the country's leadership, sanctions are no longer casting their ominous shadows on this nation, but we are still duty-bound to have a progressive, developed, and independent country. We aim to design and manufacture two types of centrifuges with the most advanced technology for medical usage.
This machine is the ultracentrifuge. It has a vital role in research and the manufacture of vaccines for human beings and livestock. It's also useful to isolate RNA and DNA when necessary. Since the most advanced technology is required for making this kind of centrifuge, only a handful of countries are able to make them. Countries such as the United States of America, Germany, South Korea, and last but not least, Japan.
مثل آمریکا، آلمان، کره جنوبی و البته ژاپن.
بله، خیلی متشکرم. بفرمایید.
Well, thank you very much. Given the fact that Pasteur Institute of Iran is in need of this advanced centrifuge, we are going to design and produce one version of it. The same goes for this one.
و همینطور این دستگاه رو. آقای مهندس توضیح می‌فرمایید؟
بله، چشم. این دستگاه که چالش بسیار بزرگی برای ماست اسمش سانتریفیوژ زوناله.
My pleasure.
This machine, which is a great challenge for us, is called the zonal centrifuge and is used in the mass production of vaccines. It's sad to say we have no sample of this machine in the country, and all our information about this machine is confined to these few photos and the machine's usage. This machine enjoys a very advanced technology to an extent that only two countries can make it, the United States of America and Japan. It must be noted that the Netherlands is also making this machine, but a limited number of them, and again by the same American company.
Well, thank you. Trusting in God and our experts' knowledge and abilities, we are pursuing greater purposes. We aim to build a centrifuge so as to sell in overseas markets and take one more big step in both the technology and the economy of our country, Iran.
This is Iran, the land of scientists who sacrifice their lives in defense of their national sovereignty. And now their inheritors have knowledge at their service to the greater glory of their land and stand to the very end like high rocky cliffs over the great mountains of their ancestors' achievements.
Given that the tubular centrifuge has the same mechanism as other centrifuges, would you explain more about your new design?
Dear doctor, I have to say that this machine, like other machines, needs a driving force so as to be able to spin the rotor at a speed of 50,000 rotations per minute. In order to supply such a driving force, we have a specific electronic engine which has been designed by our own experts and personnel.
Well, what advantages does this engine you just mentioned have in comparison with other engines?
Doctor, this engine helps the machine have more dynamic stability at high speed.
Like all other centrifuges, the second part of the machine is its rotor. Thanks to the machine's design, rotors of different size and geometric shape can be used to process different types of materials. For the third part, this machine is equipped with a vacuum system and some sensors so that the machine can work in a vacuum. The fourth part is the machine's cooling system to keep the rotor's temperature stable. The fifth part is the machine's control or monitoring system. In addition to controlling normal parameters and alarming the user when an error occurs in the machine, this part has the ability to have a record of machine's performance in memory. Things like the name and the number of the rotor, the type of the raw material, and the type of the process material. If the user inputs this information to the machine, this part can remind the user of that information. In a nutshell, the machine is programmable.
I hope that your design is so that we will face no problem in the mass production of the machine.
I'd like to assure you, Doctor, that we have made every effort and we are sure that we'll have no problem in this regard.
Doctor, as for the ultracentrifuge, in short, I have to say that the machine is like other centrifuges, but with research purposes. It is made up of five parts, and you can see on the board the schematic diagrams of each one separately. As you can see, it has a case with a sliding door inside which the machine's rotor is located. The system spins at a speed of 50,000 rotations per minute. It's made of titanium and has a capacity of 8 13.5 cc containers. The third is the machine's vacuum and leak detection system, because the isolation process is done in a vacuum. The fourth is the machine's cooling system, which can regulate the temperature of the machine's rotor from -5 degrees to 40 degrees centigrade with a radiator and sensors. And finally, the machine's control system that monitors the machine's performance with an input program and a set of built-in sensors.
Are you making this very machine right now?
No, we are not. For instance, the machine's monitoring system can have 20 programs separately so that it can let the user choose whatever items he or she wants and without changing the general setting of the machine.
Look, the changes you have made in the machine are very useful. It will enhance the machine's precision and speed. But I want to know about the phase you are at right now.
Well, to be honest, at the moment we have designed the machine's monitoring system and its components, and we're making the sample components so as to assemble them with a higher degree of certainty after having them tested. The monitoring system is being tested for defects.
Well, well done.
Thank you.
ما تقاضاهای دیگری رو از وزارت بهداشت دریافت کردیم مبنی بر
We received other orders from the Ministry of Health so as to provide the ministry, as well as pharmaceutical and vaccine-making companies belonging to the ministry, with the required advanced equipment. Among those advanced equipment, there are two very advanced centrifuges. One is called the ultracentrifuge and the other the zonal centrifuge.
Progress what all societies around the world have to make if they want to have a better and brighter future. But is social progress possible without a healthy society? And perhaps nothing better than prevention can guarantee public health. That's why prevention is achievable only through knowledge, technology, and experience.
Fortunately, the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran helped us out and went for both machines. That is the ultracentrifuge, which is for more complex purposes in comparison with the tubular centrifuge and the zonal centrifuge. We hope that the organization will be successful as usual and the result be used in Pasteur Institute of Iran.
These two centrifuges enjoy complicated technical parameters, and just a few numbers of countries have managed to make them. As for the zonal centrifuge, the information our experts had was not even enough for reverse engineering, and as a consequence, they had to carry out themselves the conceptual design, then the initial design, and finally the detailed design. We consider it as a great achievement.
مقدماتی و تفصیلی رو انجام بدم که این رو ما یک دستاورد بسیار بزرگ میدونیم زمان آن رسیده که از دانش ایجاد شده و اون
It's time to use the generated knowledge and the accumulated experience gained at the Atomic Energy Organization over years in other sectors like industry, agriculture and health system.
و بخش سلامت استفاده لازم رو ببریم.
حمایتی که سازمان انرژی اتمی از ما کرد
With the support of the Atomic Energy Organization, we can share our technology with other countries with more confidence than before. And when they ask us if we can give them the machine's components, we answer yes. We are prepared to provide you with them unconditionally.
آماده هستیم دستگاه در اختیارشون بذاریم بسیار به ما کمک کننده است.
این دو دستگاه جدید که زونال و اولترا هستن
We consider these two new machines, namely the zonal and the ultra centrifuges, as a great achievement because we were denied of both of them.
بومی شدن این دانش باعث